Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 39. My co-host David Todd is in travel from New York City back to Pittsburgh. He could not be with me today. I thought I'd switch it up a little bit today, being it's Ravens Week 2, a very important game as the Steelers take on the Baltimore Ravens at Heinz Field Sunday night, prime time. And today I lined up Dejan Kovacevic for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. And in the second interview of the day, I have Mark Cabali from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. And I was able to talk Steelers-Ravens preview with both of these beat writers this afternoon after the injury report came out. There's a lot of great tidbits in there as well. Make sure you follow Dejan Kovacevic on Twitter at Dejan_Kovacevic. And I'll put the link of this into the post here so you can follow him easily if you're not already. And Mark Cabali is Mark Cabali, one word, _Trib. Make sure you support these guys. They do great work. They're real good with the bloggers, giving interviews. I've had Mark Cabali on several times in the preseason, and this is the first time for Dejan, and he was awesome as usual. So enjoy both these interviews as we preview Ravens Steelers 2 coming up Sunday night. And David Todd will be back with me on Monday, and hopefully we're breaking down a Steelers win and a little bit of separation there in the AFC North. So enjoy the interviews, and we'll be back at you Monday.
Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. It's Friday of Ravens Week, Ravens Week number 2. I've got a special guest today from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. You all have read his stuff numerous times. He covers the Pens, the Steelers, the Buccos, anything in sports in Pittsburgh. He's all over. It's Dejan Kovacevic. Did I say that right, Dejan?
You nailed it the second time, Dave.
I nailed it the second time. I need to learn how to get my CHs in there. First off, Dejan, welcome to the Terrible Podcast. And you're a big Kiss fan, so I guess you know about the new Ace Frehley book that's out, No Regrets. Have you picked that thing up yet?
I actually did not know about it. I've been so immersed in, you know, other stuff. I'm generally the last to find out about things that happen in the actual cultural world.
Yeah, I haven't picked it up yet either. I'm probably going to run out and pick it up, but it's one of those tell-alls by Ace Frehley. And knowing that you're a Kiss fan, I knew you'd probably be interested in that. So that's definitely not Steelers talk, but I just want to make sure I slid that in there. The injury report is now out today, and it looks as if indeed James Harrison listed as probable. Looks like he's going to go. Does he have any more hurdles that it looks like he's going to have to clear before he suits up Sunday night?
Well, he does have to be examined by the doctors. One of the things, anytime an athlete is coming back from an injury in the eye or eye socket area, Dave, is that they do need to go out and experience contact, significant contact movement, and then he's going to get checked after every one of those. And he was in practice again. You know, I watched him yesterday. He was hitting people. He was James Harrison. You know, from there, he's going to have to get clearance strictly from the eye standpoint. He can't have any blurry vision, any double vision, anything else like that. There's probably going to be some discomfort, but that's not ever going to be the kind of thing that holds a James Harrison back. So once he gets the clearance on the eye aspect, I do expect to see him out there. And again, just the fact that he was out there every day this week is a very strong indicator that he'll play.
Do you think, being he has missed the last, what is it, four games since the Texas game there, Texans game, do you think they're going to limit his use in this game? Do you think he'll mostly come in and pass rush, or do you think if he starts, he's in there?
He's James Harrison. That's when he's out there, he's going to play. If there's anything that would hold him back, it wouldn't be the eye. Again, you just don't get clearance for something like that if it's 80% or even 90%. the eye is going to be fine. If he is alternated or subbed out or things like that, I think that's going to be much more of a byproduct of the fact of not being active I don't want to say game shape, because that sounds like a slight on his conditioning, but being completely ready to go for a 60-minute game, I'm sure they would still be delighted, even though they're still not 100% certain that if Jason Worlds would be ready, that'd be a wonderful thing. Then they have some other options. They can also, move Lawrence either inside, outside, whatever it is. They have, let's put it this way, they have a lot more options at linebacker right now than they did 48 or 72 hours ago.
I definitely agree, and it'd be good to get Timmons back inside there.
Especially against this team, Dave. I mean, people think of Ray Rice because he's not a big guy. They think of him as a guy that goes around end or whatever. No, he's right between the tackles. They're going to have to plug up that middle. James Ferrier, if he's out there, so much the better. Anything that they can do to take away that middle, they certainly did not do that in the opener in Baltimore, but then they didn't do much of anything in the opener.
Yeah, that's definitely true. And Worlds, I think all of Steeler Nation is, really wanting to see this guy hit the field. Lamar Woodley, I it's not really a surprise that he got ruled out. He dropped like he got shot in the back of the leg. It was kind of reminiscent of the Andre Johnson injury back in week four there. Right now, I really would be surprised if he makes it back for the Bengals game. So I think Chris Carter's just a little too green, not strong enough on that edge right there. So I think Worlds is going to have a big game filling in for Woodley this week as well. Do you expect to see a lot more of that Dick LeBeau man press coverage that we saw last week?
Honestly, I don't think so. I think you can see them alternate now that they're confident they have it. But Joe Flacco is not Tom Brady, and I say that in every sense of the term. Tom Brady's a guy who he'll sit back, he'll wait for zone defenses, and he'll exploit them for the simple reason that he can just do timing. If he knows that receiver X is going to be at Y position and the defense is set up like Z, that's tailor-made for him. But if you put a William Gay on somebody and Will can use his athleticism like he did last week, bump the guy a little bit, it throws everything out of whack. The Steelers were able to get away with a lot of good bumps. I thought the Steelers secondary did all of them. Ryan Mundy, everybody. I mean, you can go right up and down a list. That disrupted the tight ends and Wes Welker. Baltimore is not that kind of team. Flacco is not that type of quarterback. Flacco can look at a zone defense and still get confused. And I don't think that's a card you want to take out of your deck. I'd rather see the Steelers mix it up a little bit. Now you know you can do the man thing. You ran the experiment on a grand scale, and it worked. So mix it up a little bit.
Would you still have Ike Taylor? Lee Evans has been ruled out of this game, and that's who Ike Taylor had duties on primarily in that week one game there. Would you, despite the zone, would you let Ike follow Bolden, who normally does most of his work down in there in the slot, or would you still stay in the zone regardless there?
If I hadn't seen Ike in the slot last week, I'd say, oh, no, maybe not, whatever. There's a combination of three factors here that would have me confident in Ike in the slot. One is, not confident, but wanting to use him in the slot. One is, we saw Bolden in week one against McFadden. It was a disaster. We saw Bolden last week against anybody at all that Arizona put on him, and it was a disaster of epic proportions, and not the least of which is that Arizona never put and you never gave these guys any kind of help. It's some of the worst defensive coaching you'll ever see. And the third factor is that Ike lined up after, early on, Dick LeBeau and Connell Link had a couple of different matchups, I think just to try to throw New England off against Welker in the slot. But not once the game got going. It was almost entirely Ike after that. He was in a slot. It didn't affect him at all. I asked Ike about it at the time and since then, and he's just like, I don't care where you line up. So if that's where they're going to put their best receiver, that's where the Steelers need to put their best corner.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with you on that, and I think there's going to be a few surprises this week. You know, Tomlin threw out that stuff at the Tuesday press conference. I think a lot of that was just more to get it out in the media to have the Ravens thinking there. I don't think we're going
The 4-3 stuff, the 4-3, 4-2 stuff?
Right.
Yeah, that ain't happening.
Yeah, the more you think about it, the more you see some of these healthy bodies now, especially with Worlds and Harrison and all. I think that was.
And actually, you know, I asked Nick LeBeau about it yesterday, and you could just tell. He gave me an answer along the lines of, "You got to watch how much you give people." Meaning, you know, how much you're asking. I believe his exact quote was, "I think you got to watch how much you're asking people to do." And it's a very valid point. The Steelers have been 3-4 forever. And yeah, it's one thing to ask your corners to go into man coverage. It's another thing to ask people who were drafted specifically for a certain need, you know, at outside linebacker, a certain type of player, certain type of position, all of a sudden do things differently. That's not going to happen, and it's not going to be necessary. If they can plug up the middle of the field, there's no reason to believe that they shouldn't be able to stop Ray Rice. You know, whatever it was, you know, one of the things that I think we all need to go back, as cringeworthy as it was to that first game, you have to look at what set of factors contributed to Ray Rice being able to run the ball. Number one, in my mind, wasn't even the linebacker play, although the middle linebacker play was poor. It was the defensive line. I don't know why Brett Kiesel wasn't himself in that game, but he wasn't. I don't know why Casey Hampton wasn't himself, but he wasn't. Aaron Smith, you know, we now have a lot of explanations for that. But overall, that defensive line and this defensive line have almost nothing in common. That alone, I think, was going to help the Steelers defend the run. Even if those aren't the guys making the tackles, because you know how the Steelers system works.
Right.
Those guys, this defensive line, especially if they have Ziggy Hood playing the way he did last week in tandem with Woodley over there on the left side, Brett Kiesel is playing like he's from another planet right now. And I thought Casey Hampton established himself right off the bat, first series, and looked like the old Casey Hampton again. So it's a good-looking defensive line right now, nothing at all like what we saw in Baltimore.
Yeah, and you know what? This game is going to be totally different, too, because let's look at the offensive line that we have this go-around versus what we had the first go-around. The first go-around, we had Doug Legursky at right guard. We had Willie Colon at right tackle. We had Jonathan Scott at left tackle there, you know. Totally different set. And when the guy, you know, Haloti not a practice today, he, you know, he's going to suit up. He's not going to miss this game.
But
But with this thigh injury that he has, the way that Marcus Gilbert and Ramon Foster have been double teaming there on the defensive tackles there these last few games, they look like they're really working good together. I don't think the Steelers should be that afraid to run right and run right at the outside linebacker. Who's that? Jared Johnson over there. And
and they'll be able to do that, and they'll be willing to do it. The question that I have out of that group, first of all, let me say that I agree with you about Ramon Foster. But let me take it a step further and tell you that the Steelers would wholeheartedly agree with you about the game that Ramon Foster had. I talked to Ramon immediately after that New England game and asked him how he thought he did. You know, linemen usually will know. They don't have to wait until the Tuesday grades come out.
Right.
And Ramon was like, he was trying to be humble, and he's like, well, you know, let's see how the film goes. I go, Ramon, come on, man. You saw what you did out there. And he goes, yeah, it was a pretty good game. you know, that is going to be important. It's not even going to come close to being as important as what on earth they're going to do against Suggs. I love what Max Starch has done. I love the fact that the Steelers are 4-0 since he's come back. I want help over there. I want somebody in the backfield. If you can find a way to, and I understand it takes a weapon out of your hand to have somebody else back there, whether it's whether it's DJ, whether it's having an Isaac Redman or somebody back there. Isaac Redman's done a really good job picking up blitzes, by the way.
Sure has.
if you find a way to neutralize that guy, even if it costs you two offensive players, you have to do it. This is an old, boring, really, pattern where the Steelers just think that they're just going to be the tough guys, and no one player can disrupt us. Terrell Suggs' history is that not only will he disrupt them, he'll destroy them up front. They have to formulate an answer to stop him, and it has to be a definitive one, Dave. It can't be, go get a Max.
Yeah, I definitely agree, and I think, we saw the Steelers really use a lot of empty sets last week against New England with good reason, based on
sure,
that secondary.
Sure, yeah,
that
they didn't have anybody like that. Yeah.
But this week, I just don't think you can
in fairness, in fairness, there was a little bit of they did double-team Will Fork on occasions or whatever, but they neutralized him. That said, Will Fork is not Suggs. He's not.
Right.
No one is. I don't think anybody in the NFL is right now, with the exception of Lamar, who you don't have to worry about.
Right, and Starks had a pretty good day overall with Carter last week, but once again, Carter's not Suggs. I just would not expect. I think the Ravens almost want us to go empty set so they can run zero coverage up over the top and take their chances to get to Roethlisberger before he can get the ball out there. But I would expect more of 13 personnel with three tight ends this week, at least 12 personnel with two tight ends, and Roethlisberger trying to get that ball out quick. Again, like he's done the last week against New England and the game against the Titans.
That's actually a big
factor in this equation is whether or not Ben realizes, and I'm not so sure that he does right now, how good he has been when he's just sat in the pocket and fired the ball. He still seems to be under the impression that he's only playing well when he goes running all over creation and then finds, Antonio Brown 35 yards downfield.
Right.
Okay. I go back to the Tennessee game when Ben could barely move, and he was practically Kent Graham into the ground. I mean, he couldn't even budge, and it was great. Because all he did was take the snap, find his guy, fire it. And he's good at that. His receivers are, in some cases, really good at getting yards after the catch in those situations. You utilize Heath Miller, you utilize your slot guy, and you keep the secondary honest so you can spring Wallace for something bigger. I love seeing them like that. I'm just not convinced that Ben does.
Yeah. I definitely agree, and I think he will have, if they don't have to run the ball great in this game Sunday night. They just have to run it enough to bring play action into play, and like you said, if they use this short stuff, he's going to have three or four shots at Wallace deep. He's going to have to pick his spots on that, but he does not have to throw three home run balls a day for the Steelers to win. Now, explosive plays really do make a difference in the game, but the Steelers can get these if they get they can get the explosive 20-yard plays if they get the ball to these receivers moving, in 10 or 12-yard patterns, and we saw a lot of that last week. You don't have to get it all in one chunk, and I think you're exactly right.
It's a very different defense that they're facing. And if you look at the number, I thought the number was 17 or something like that, plays that the Steelers had that were 20 or more yards or something like that.
I can't remember the exact number. It was really high. That's not going to happen against Baltimore. It's just not. Ed Reed's back there. I don't care what else they have going on out there. Ed Reed's back there. You're not going to get away with that. And if you try that many passes of that length, Ed Reed's going to pick off at least a couple of them. He's going to run one of them back. There has to be a more conservative approach to the passing game. I'm with you that the run game isn't essential, which is good because I don't know how much they'll have. But the short, quick passing game is working for the Steelers better than they even want to admit. And I think that's the direction that they need to go. That's how you wear down the Ravens middle of the field. That's how you spread them out a little bit. That's how you back them off the line of scrimmage and keep them honest.
Yeah, the Steelers have had 27 explosive plays through the air this year. And as you said, the Ravens have given up only 16 of 20 yards or more. And the only team that's given up less explosive plays through the air, of course, are the Steelers with 15 and the Lions with 15. So I'm with you. I think you got to nickel and dime these guys, get a lead on them. And I think another thing is get Joe Flacco in some of these third down and long situations, because his completion percentage has been absolutely
isn't it something like, I thought I saw that it's something like when he has third and six or longer.
40-something percent.
I know, it's like 34.
Is it that low?
Yeah,
Take a look. I thought I saw it, but yeah, it's under. It's
anyway,
40
it's
or
not
less.
Good.
Yeah,
the bottom line is it's not good.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And it's not good even when he just straight out, you know, pass him. But if you get him in that third and long or third down period, he's not good. But as you said, third and six or better, it's down there. And that's got to be the key to stopping him on first down.
Well, but the key to setting up those third and sixes and everything else, obviously, is to go back to his original topic is Ray Rice.
Right.
If he's averaging 4 yards, 5 yards, just falling forward, you're in for a long day, because you're never going to put Flacco in that uncomfortable position. And you know he's all too willing and eager to put himself into an uncomfortable position mentally. I mean, you see, this guy still has extended stretches where he just kind of falls apart. And you have to put that pressure on him. And I'm not necessarily talking about pressure as in sacks and hurries. I'm talking about pressure as in third and sevens, third and 11. Make him work. Make
right.
him sweat a little bit. He'll fall apart.
Right. Dejon, I definitely appreciate your time. I got you about 20 minutes, and I certainly do appreciate you giving me to that on a busy Friday here. Do you like the Steelers' chances in this game?
I like their chances, and you know, I wrote on my blog today that you know I could see them winning the game 23-20, mostly because some of the things that we've talked about here, particularly the improvement on both Steelers lines since the opener. But in general, in the broadest sense, I like the fact that the Steelers are a team that's on an upswing right now. Baltimore's not.
Right.
I mean, we can praise them all we want for the big comeback against Arizona. The fact of the matter is, they played one half of football against the Cardinals and were down 24-6.
Right.
That's not a team that's flying high right now. So I know that momentum doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot once you enter a Pittsburgh-Baltimore arena, but it might in this case. I like the fact that the Steelers are getting better.
Certainly do. Dejon, I certainly do appreciate you spending time with me. For those, I know everybody in Pittsburgh and outside of Pittsburgh reads his stuff on the Tribune Review. He also has a weekly chat on there. He's very, very active on Twitter. You can follow him at Dejon_Kovacevic as well. Dejon, I appreciate this is your first time on a Terrible Podcast. I'm going to get you on again sometime.
I've been christened now, Dave.
have a great weekend and enjoy the game, and I'll holler at you online.
Thanks. You do the same.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
That was Dejon Kovacevic from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. Make sure you are following him on Twitter. Make sure you're reading his stuff in the Tribune. He does great work, and we appreciate him spending time with us today breaking down this game. Next up is my interview with Mark Cabali from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, talking more Steelers-Ravens.
And welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. Pleased to be joined now by Mark Cabali, a friend of the Terrible Podcast. He's been on with us a few times. We haven't really talked to him since training camp has gotten completed and all, but it's Ravens week. We try to get as much info jacked up in here as we can. Mark, welcome back to the Terrible Podcast.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Dave.
The injury report's out on Friday. You pretty much have nailed this one all the way through the week here. James Harrison looks probable. Looks like he's going to be able to go. Woodley, I mean, I think anybody who couldn't see through that facade is, kind of fooling themselves there. We knew what he was doing all along. So did you. I guess the big question I have, outside of those guys, is what's up with Daniel Sepulveda showing up on X questionable today?
You know, I'm not quite sure about that, but I wouldn't worry about that too much. It's probably just something to just be precautious to put on that injury report, but I really don't try to talk to the punter that much, so I wouldn't believe it's nothing very major, nothing to worry about.
For a while, it looked like we might need Sepulveda to play middle linebackers. Yeah. But Hines Ward, I'm guessing he's going to be a go with Emmanuel Sanders down in Texas with the death of his mother, of course. So, you know, from all sides, I would say he and Jericho Cotchery are going to get a lot of time, especially in the 3 and 4 wide receiver sets this week.
Yeah, and I don't even think that's going to be a huge, huge loss. I know Emmanuel Sanders has had a pretty good season, a pretty good past couple of weeks. But if you recall back in training camp, Jericho Cotchery came in here and really, really opened some eyes if he still had some gas left in that tank early on. But he dealt with that hamstring injury for, it had to be 4, 5, 6 weeks, frustrating a little bit. Then with the emergence of Sanders and Brown, of what they did, he just never found a spot. But we have to remember that this guy's is a veteran receiver who's been there, done that, and it really showed in his limited action, even on the practice field, that he's still a viable player. So I wouldn't worry much about him whatsoever. He might even get more time than maybe a Hines Ward, because Hines is still hobbling around a little bit from that injury. I don't know how 100% he is, but I would say on the straight factor of being how good somebody is right now, I would even put Jericho Cotchery a little bit ahead of Hines Ward. So I don't think Sanders being out is going to be that much of a big deal.
Do you expect the Steelers to use a lot of 3 tight ends this week? Last week it was pretty obvious what they were doing based on the Patriots' thin secondary issues and the issues they had stopping the big play all season long. We saw a lot of 4 wide receiver sets and some empty sets and all like that. Do you expect them to go a little bit more protection-wise, 2 and 3 tight end sets this week, or do you expect them to still kind of spread out the Ravens?
That's a tough one. Bruce Arians loves to use a 3 tight end set in virtually any situation. It doesn't even mean he has to use them to block. But you know what, Dave? I would not be shocked if we see a similar game plan to what they had last week. Maybe not 50 times, but maybe using that short, quick, precise passing game for a ball control offense, which then it does, it keeps the Ravens off the field, but also what it does is keep maybe Terrell Suggs in check a little bit and let him not get the bench, because we all know Suggs' number was a 13.5 career sacks, 15 or so, including the playoffs against the Steelers. He's just been a one-man wrecking crew. So they come out and use that same sort of philosophy. They might be able to protect Roethlisberger the best way there. So I would not be stunned at just seeing something like that either. Just come out, throw the ball short, precise passes like they did last week. Maybe take one deeper, too. But we have to think here, too, as Pollard and Reed are a little bit better than what the Patriots had in their back end, but I'm not too sold on those Ravens cornerbacks myself. I mean, I don't think they're much, much better than the Patriots, so that's something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, Ladarius Webb and Kerry Williams don't exactly strike the fear of, you know, their safety play is especially a lot better than the Patriots. That's pretty obvious with Ed Reed and Pollard back there as well. You know, what's kind of interesting, you talked to Roethlisberger yesterday, and you tweeted a little something about how, you know, he thinks that Aaron Rodgers will have to break his leg for Ben to probably win the MVP this year, and you're probably spot on that. In fact, I think you said Ike Taylor's got a better chance of going to the Pro Bowl than that happening. All that being said, and us talking about the short passing game there, do you think that this is something, you know, in talking to Ben, do you think it's hard for him to force himself to not kind of play the playground football and kind of stay in the system now with what's working with this short passing game? Because let's face it, there's only been 2 or 3 games that we've really seen it used very well, the Titans game, the game against the Patriots, and, you know, maybe 1 or 2 other times during the season. But do you think he just wants to play long ball?
Yeah, he doesn't mind it. He enjoys that. But you know, he's become a very mature quarterback over the past couple of years, and this is something, what they did against the Patriots, there's no way he would have been patient enough to do that as little as 2 years ago, let alone, you know, 3, 4 years ago. he's grown that much, and I actually do think that he realizes right now that his best option of not getting his own head knocked off might be doing this short patient stuff. Now, I think the New England was to an extreme to the short passing, the 5-6 short passes. I think their ultimate goal would be with him is to have those short passes, make the corners maybe come up a little bit, then try to beat them up over top. I mean, they didn't try once against New England. I think Ben had 2 30-plus yard passes, and they were both throwaways. So I think their ultimate goal would be to marry the two things together. But saying that, Bruce Arians might come out and run the ball 4 times. They did, you know, they did run the ball pretty well against the Ravens early in that game before it got away week 1. So, you know, at this time, I guess you have to give Arians and Tomlin credit because you really don't know what they're going to do right now. I mean, I don't know if they're going to run. I don't know if they're going to pass, which leads me to believe that, I mean, I'm not as smart as John Harbaugh, of course, but he must be pretty worried about the multiple formations and things that they can get into. So I think his offense probably going to have to try to win this game for him this week again.
Yeah, you know, when I'm breaking down this game, too, it's so hard on both sides of the ball, especially what they did on defense. The Steelers did on defense, breaking out a lot of the man press coverage last week. And on offense, really, they've got multiple identities they can kind of use now. So you're right. I think Harbaugh has definitely had a harder time preparing for this game, especially when you factor in the guys trying to be as coy as they can about injuries on the defensive side of the ball. I'm definitely with you. I think he's probably had a tough time preparing for this game. It'll be interesting to see how they attack it. Jason World, you know, it looks like he's going to get the start at left outside linebacker with Woodley down. Where is this guy? You know, where is this guy's head at right now? I mean, I know he's had the quad injury, and he really has not had many snaps over the course of the year and a half now. Is he ready? Do you expect him to? Of course, he's not going to fill Woodley's shoes. But do you expect him to have some impact in the game Sunday night?
I would probably say from the history, no, because he really hasn't shown us anything since he got drafted. I mean, he can't get on the field. He's shown flashes of brilliance at times during practice that makes you believe this guy could be one of those linebackers of the future. But then he gets on the field and he gets hurt and he doesn't do anything. So I really I don't think we should expect very much out of Worlds. I mean, I'm sure he'll be better in their alternative of Chris Carter, but he needs to step up this game. This is a chance for him to really assert himself because and you look back at that draft now and you know who was taken right after Jason World in that draft. I know they're different positions, but Sean Lee would probably be a nice fit in the inside with the Steelers right now. So that's a little bit of a lot. That's a lot to live up to right now, and he hasn't shown him nothing. He's going to have to do something against the Ravens, and he should be able to because they're both their tackles are sort of, how do I put this, beatable. They can be beat. They can be taken. Worlds is a big, fast, strong guy, but like I keep saying, he has to prove it. Until he proves it, I really don't have much regard for him right now.
Does it seem like he fits in the locker room? I mean, you're in there. You see it. Or is he more of a loner, or does he seem to fit in with the group there?
He seems to fit in with the younger group. You don't see much of him with the Harrisons, the Ferrers, the Woodleys, the Foots. You more see around the other guys, the Morty Ivies and the Chris Carters and the younger crew there, but he seems like a smart kid. He seems like a kid that has his head on straight, but he just hasn't been able to translate into on the field right now. But you know, a lot of that has been injuries. He stays healthy, maybe he is the next big time linebacker.
Chris Hoke, he has not shown up on the injury report this week, but I've kind of got my doubts of whether or not they'll suit him up this week. Do you think they'll suit up the 3 nose tackles? I mean, seems to me like they would just go ahead and let Hampton and McClendon continue to dress to give Hoke another week, to get better from that kind of stinger nerve problem he has. Do you have any insight on his status?
I talked to him yesterday, I believe, Hoke, and he says the big problem with him now is still the strength. He doesn't have a lot of that strength back. he's hoping to play. But I think what we might see is if he does play, they might dress all three of them, and they might be able to use somebody like Steve McClendon as a defensive end. I overheard something the other day that I probably shouldn't have, but we might be able to see Steve McClendon a little bit of defensive end. I don't know if that's practice-wise or that could be something game-wise, but they might be able to do something like that. But if you look back at that Baltimore game week one, you know, Casey Hampton was in there about 80% of the time on base defense. They really didn't use a backup nose tackle at all, and it was a pretty warm day, so I don't know how much you're going to really use a second nose tackle even if they do dress him.
Do you think the Ravens, I mean, it would be silly for them not to try what worked so well in the first game, but we haven't seen them try to do a lot of the zone. You know, of course, they've been without Grubbs, who looks like he might be back this week at left guard. Do you expect them to try to use the same game plan that they used week one, or do you think they're dead set on trying to go vertical now too?
I think their game plan week one was to get 7 turnovers from the Steelers. That was the best thing to work for them. I think what they're going to come in to do is probably try to bring a heavy dose of Ray Rice. I think that's really what they're going to have to do. I think the Steelers might play a little bit more nickel, a little bit more dime than like they did in the first week. And to do something like that, they're going to have to run Ray Rice up the middle. So I think they're coming in with the theory of probably, once again, cutting Casey in the middle, get him on the ground, and try to get some big runs from Ray Rice.
I'm talking to Mark Cabali, Pittsburgh Tribune Review. If you're not following him on Twitter, Mark Cabali, _Trib. He also does a great blog post following every week where it's called After Further Review, where he goes through the tape and breaks down what he sees. And I kind of use that as a guide to what I see. And I feel good sometimes when my notes kind of match yours. So that it's definitely great work, and it's a must read every week. Brett Kiesel, man, what a year this guy's having despite missing a little bit of time early on with that injury there. Are you kind of worried that they're just not giving him enough snaps off? You know, Cameron Hayward, I think, has only 90 snaps on defensive side of the ball this year. Are we going to start slowly, you know, after we get through maybe the Ravens and the Bengals games, are you going to see them maybe try to spell him a little bit more, or do you think Cameron Hayward's just not there just yet?
I think, I mean, if you look in past history, Tomlin really doesn't like to throw in those rookies right away. I think he had to do a little bit more than he wanted to with Hayward early in the season, and I'm sure you would know better than me breaking down the tape that I would guess that Hayward's snap numbers have probably fallen off over the past couple weeks. Kiesel, they have to keep him healthy. And I think they need to put Kiesel in more of a position to make plays, too. It seems like a lot of times, I mean, it's just a position that doesn't allow defensive ends to make plays, and he is the type of guy that still is able to make plays. I mean, Kiesel, he disappears for times, then all of a sudden he comes up with that big strip sack, that big batted ball, that pick six. So they do need to keep him healthy. And spelling him, I just don't know. Maybe that's where Steve McClendon comes in. Maybe they feel that he's more suited to take over right now than Cam Hayward. I think Hayward's really hit probably like that rookie wall, and I don't see him improving as much as maybe he did over the first couple of weeks and even in preseason.
I had Dejan Kovacevic on a little while ago as well, too. I was asking him about what he would do in this man cover that the Steelers ran predominantly last week against the Patriots. Would you line up that way this week as well and put Ike Taylor on Anquan Boldin, let him chase him around the field most of the day? Or would you switch back and maybe show Joe Flacco some zone this week?
I would absolutely do the same thing, just for the fact that I don't think – Ravens have the receivers that can really beat man coverage. Anquan Boldin's big, strong, and fast, but Ike Taylor's pretty big, strong, and fast for a cornerback, too. So he's proven he can shut down just about anybody. Now, do you like your chances with William Gay on Torrey Smith? But it just seems like every week with the Steelers, they have to account for the tight ends. I know Dixon beat him a couple times last time, and I think if there's going to be some sort of a passing game to come out of this, Baltimore's going to have to get Dixon involved. And which leads to believe last week's game plan might be absolutely perfect, the same thing as this week's game plan, because it's very similar. They don't really have those receivers that can beat you deep, and the only thing they really have is running back out of the backfield, which the Patriots have, and a tight end, which the Patriots have. So saying that, it might be very similar to the game plan.
Yeah, Baltimore likes to run that diesel package that they like to call with Dennis Pitta and Dixon there, and then the one running back there. And I expect to see a lot of that. And you could see Monday and Cortez Allen, who, you know, Allen, you know, he gave up some catches last week, but none of them were backbreakers to Gronkowski, you know, mostly out in the flat over there. If he can do that same thing and just not give up the big 20-yard play, I'm fine with that. And same with Monday as well, too. I think Monday's not getting enough credit the way he's kind of played, you know, over these several weeks since we've seen a lot of his dime big nickel package. And Troy down in the box, I think, can handle maybe spying, you know, along with Timmons kind of spying on Ray Rice. And I would think if they could jump on the Ravens quick, you know, maybe a good 10-13 point lead right off the bat, get them into these passing downs. They don't have to worry about being in base defense so much and protecting against a run.
I don't even know if I could not add anything to that. I think you said that absolutely perfect.
Well, I tell you, I spend a lot. I know you do, too. I thoroughly look forward to what you write up on that, breaking down that tape after further review and all. And I invite all the people to follow you on Twitter and all. You got a pretty good feeling. It sounds like you got a pretty good feeling about this game overall. Are you going to save your prediction, or you want to throw it out there for us?
You know, I've been on record already. I thought the Steelers were going to beat the Patriots last week, and I somehow got that one right. And I think the home field advantage means a lot in this series. And I think, I mean, this game, as you know more than anybody, this game is extremely important, just not for bragging rights or anything like that. I mean, you can't go down a game on the Ravens with them beating you twice, them having two less division losses than you and two less conference losses than you, with seven games left and you play about the same amount, the same teams on your schedule left. So this game is huge. Saying that, I think the Steelers will take that first game, use that as some kind of fuel in their gut, and I think they're going to win this game. I think they're going to win it 24-14.
Good deal. And you've got a great piece coming out. Is it Saturday or Sunday on Casey Hampton and did this cut blocking?
It'll be out tomorrow in the Tribune Review. And Casey basically said, you know, I was kind of stunned when they cut me so many times the first game. They never showed that before. They've rarely showed that in the past since. He said he wasn't prepared, and he said, you know what, I will be prepared this time. And you look back at the numbers, it was something like they cut him, Marshall Yonder, the guard, cut Hampton 10 times, and those 10 times resulted in 96 yards rushing. So he's absolutely sure they're going to try it again, but he absolutely assures me that he knows how to beat it now. So that should be a nice, interesting matchup to watch.
Good deal. We'll make sure I always get these links out in my Twitter feed as well to your stories and everything on the Tribune Review, and you do great work as usual. And you've become, let me tell you, you've taken over Twitter. Are you still behind Scott Brown? Do we need to get you back ahead?
Yeah, he's killing me, man. I was up on him all the while, and all of a sudden he just zoomed by. But let me tell you something, Dave. You're talking about our work here, but let me tell you something. There's not a week that doesn't go by in that Steelers media room that the word Steelers Depot doesn't come up. I mean, I think you made quite a name for yourself amongst the media as a great source and a great tool and a great way to get information out there. So I just want to let you know that if your ears are ringing on Wednesday, Thursdays, or Fridays, there's probably people in the media room talking about you.
Well, I feel blessed. You know what? I love what I do, and I hope it shows. I can be an ass sometimes, and I tell my Twitter followers, but I'm just an everyday guy, a fan that loves the Steelers, and I, you know, I can't get out half of what I get out without you guys getting it out too. And I think you guys do a fantastic job in the Pittsburgh media, all of you out there. So make sure you pass that on to some of those guys in there, because it's consuming, and I love information. I know the fans do as well. So you guys keep up the good work, and it makes my job a lot easier. So Mark, I certainly do appreciate having you on, and we're going to have you on again a couple of weeks here. So thanks again for your time as always.
All right, Dave, I'll see you later.
All right, bye-bye.
That was the great Mark Cabali from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, and we thank him for joining us today on the Terrible Podcast as well. For people that are wanting my prediction on this game, I see the Steelers getting it done, getting a little bit of a payback here Sunday night. The injuries are tough as far as the linebacking core goes, but it looks like James Harrison's indeed going to play. I think Jason Worlds can do just enough on the outside in place of Lamar Woodley. I think the big key, of course, is stopping the run, as we talked about in both these interviews here. I predict the Steelers to win this game 27-20 at home at Heinz Field Sunday night. Enjoy the game, and we'll be back with you Monday. And thanks again for all your support, and thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. We'll talk to you on Monday.